Hello. Whoa, I haven't talked to you in forever. Yeah, he's right here, but we're getting ready to do a podcast. Yeah, the Negative Positives Podcast. Out of the Gutter Man Cave in Louisville, Kentucky. Yeah, I can give him a message for you. Okay, I'll do it. Hey, take care of yourself. Hey, Gutterman! 1997 called. They want their APS film back. And now, here is your host, Mike Gutterman!
Hello, and welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 166. I am your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave on a Sunday night. And it is Sunday night, so what does that mean? Well, that means I should have guests on here, right? So let's see who I have on the line. Yeah. Okay, well, we were trying to get Graham on from the Sunny 16 podcast to judge the Negative Positives Tag Team Double Exposure Challenge. And we almost had it lined up, and I thought we were going to be able to make it happen. But then this hurricane came into North Carolina, and that's where Andre is located. And I believe Andre may be without power, or he's had power problems intermittently today. And so I've had very little communication with Andre. And hope everything's okay, and hope he's got plenty of bourbon to get him through his time, possibly without power or internet service. So could not get him in on the podcast tonight. So I thought, well, I don't want to do the tag team challenge judging with Graham and without Andre, because I think that wouldn't be fair to him, because that's going to be a heavy hitter episode. It's gonna be a banger. So I want Andre to be able to have full enjoyment of being on that. So I thought about maybe lining up some other guests. Sherry Christensen, I thought maybe I might have her on. She was gonna kind of bail me out if we couldn't get the thing going with Graham. But it turns out Andre couldn't make it. So I'm going to save Sherry for a time when we can have a proper episode with her. And so basically what all this means is you've got me and me only. And that's just going to have to do, I guess. So it's a rare solo Sunday night show. So I'll try to make this somewhat entertaining, but I make no promises about that. But I've got some emails that I can address and some call-ins to the Anchor app, which I'm very thankful for, because that's really bailing me out tonight as far as what the heck I'm going to talk about. But first of all, I guess, I would ask everybody how their weeks have been going, but it's just me. So what have I been doing this week? Well, basically, I'm getting ready for my big art show. The Louisville Unfair is coming up in the first weekend of October. So I just have a couple more weeks to prepare for that. So I'm busy printing and framing and all this stuff. So that's kind of been what my life's going to be the next couple of weeks, as I've mentioned before. But one thing I will say, and I've talked a lot about this HP Instant Ink program that I'm in, where I pay like $5 a month and HP sends me ink cartridges anytime I get low, and I can get like about 100 8x10 color or black and white photos out of that for $5 a month. Well, this month, because I knew I was going to be doing a lot more printing for the art show, I bumped up my subscription to $9 a month for like 300 pages. So, because I know I'm going to do a lot of printing this month, and then like after the art show's over, I'll knock it back down to the $5 100 pages a month deal that they have. Why I'm saying all this is, well, because I've been doing a lot heavier printing all in a matter of a span of a couple of days, I did run out of ink before HP knew I was getting low, and so I'm kind of in a hold pattern. HP has sent me an email saying they've got more ink coming my way, but I can't really do any more printing until I get the new cartridges in the mail. And that's not really so much a problem with the subscription service. It's just the fact that I decided in like a span of 24 hours to burn through two color cartridges all at once, and they just didn't have time to get me. By the time the first one even reported that it was low, I'd already burnt through the second one. So but yeah, hopefully those cartridges will come in sometime this week, and next weekend I'll be able to do some heavy printing again and get ready for this art show. But yeah, still really, really happy with the service so far. So if you're looking for a cheap way to print at home, that HP printer with the instant ink services. It's really not, hasn't turned out to be too bad of a deal for me at this point. So I'm still on board with it. But also, let's see, what else have I got done? I think last weekend I developed a lot of film. And so this week I've been kind of getting it all scanned. And one roll that really surprised me was my first attempts at pinhole photography. I used the Holga wide pinhole camera, the WPC-120, I believe it is. Shot it at 6x9 format. You can also shoot that camera at 6x12, but I like the look of 6x9, so that's probably all I'll really ever shoot with that. And but I was really, I took those shots in Florida on my Florida trip back in July, and I was really kind of worried about it because I used this little tiny tripod, and it was real windy on the beach, and this tripod was not necessarily holding things very, very steady, especially using the, shutter release cable. I just felt like the camera was moving a lot from the wind during the exposure. The exposures were about, I think, about 4 seconds, somewhere in that range. I shot it on T-Max 100. And so basically, I thought everything was going to be a shaky, blurry mess, and not blurry like pinholes normally are, but like actual, you know, camera shake. And turns out that was only really a problem on maybe two of the frames, but I gotta say, I was blown away at the results, and I think that I'm gonna be doing a whole lot more pinhole in the future. It was really, really love what I got out of it, and that T-Max 100 just really, really surprised me as far as in that pinhole camera how well it worked out. I did use the Pinhole Assist app on the iPhone, which I think is only available on iPhone, and you know, I entered the Holga wide pinhole camera as my camera, and entered Kodak T-Max 100 as the film I was using. And basically it calculated the reciprocity of that film for me and told me what my exposure would be, used it as the light meter on my scenes, and it did a pretty darn good job. So I have to commend that app too, because it really nailed the exposure for me, and I couldn't have gotten better results, I think, than what I got out of it. And interestingly, the T-Max 100 film that I was using in that camera was from the bad batch that Kodak had problems with. They had a batch of T-Max 100 back, oh gosh, a year or two ago, where the backing paper, so the way they printed the numbers, something was defective about it, so that like the numbers on the backing paper were actually ghosting onto the film, so you would see like the frame number and Kodak T-Max kind of like a ghost image on your photograph, on your negative. And so I had contacted Kodak. I talked about this in an episode quite a long time ago, but I'd contacted Kodak. I had three boxes of this stuff, three pro packs, so I had 15 rows of this T-Max 100 that was affected by this bad batch of backing paper. So yeah, like I said, contacted Kodak and took a picture of the boxes showing the lot number that was affected, that it was one of the affected runs of T-Max 100. And Kodak sent me 15 brand new rows of T-Max 100 and told me to throw out the old T-Max 100, the defective rolls. I'm not throwing any film away. Like, you guys know I like the lo-fi stuff. I figured if some of the numbers or the Kodak T-Max print bled through onto my photo, I was like, that might be kind of a cool lo-fi Lomo kind of look. So I was just going to roll with it. So being this was my first experiment with pinhole, I didn't really care if the numbers bled through or whatever, because I honestly didn't expect to get much out of my first attempt at it. And honestly, on only one shot could I see a little bit of the ghosting of the print from the backing paper showing up on the photo. And luckily, that was one of the ones that had a little bit of the motion blur from the camera shake. So it didn't seem to affect any of the really good shots. So, but even if it had, it wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have been something that I think would have destroyed the photo. I think it just would have been something kind of unique and kind of strangely funny, but kind of cool. But so now I have plenty of rows of this supposed bad batch T-Max 100 and the 15 rows that Kodak sent me to replace it. So I'm kind of really stocked on that film. And that's good, because I think it's going to be my pinhole camera film of choice, because I really, really like the way it came out in that camera with that film. So if you want to see my shots of the my first pinholes, I posted it on the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. Also posted it in the Lensless Podcast Facebook group. And also posted them on my my Facebook photography page, which is just Mike Gutterman Photography. But if you want to check those out. Let's see, what else here? Oh, yeah, also, when I was in Findlay, Ohio at the FPP Walking Workshop, I put my first roll of black and white in the Pentax, the Pentax 67, the 6.7. And it was the first time I shot black and white in that camera. And I also used one of the supposed bad batch of T-Max 100 film on that particular in that camera at the time, and I didn't get any you know paper backing print issues bleeding onto the photographs in those, and just really like the way those came out. Man, that camera, it just impresses me every time. It's really making me wanting to shoot more medium format. Every time I get the results out of that, it's like, wow, this just so blows away. 35 millimeter medium format just really is it's something. And I'm starting to get a little less enamored with 35 millimeter every time I shoot medium format. So I mean, even medium format on my Hoga and stuff, it's just shocking sometimes the quality you get out of those. And of course, if you've seen some of my Hoga shots lately, some of the people on Instagram were like, I can't believe how sharp your Hoga is. And I gotta admit, I think I got real lucky with my Hoga. It just seems to be ridiculously sharp in the center, but also, you know, has the blur around the edges like a Hoga should, and in the vignetting or whatever, it has all that Hoga look, but the center is super sharp for a Hoga, and it's very impressive. I got very lucky with that Hoga, and I hope to God that thing never dies, because I will definitely cry if it does, because it's a special Hoga. I think that's the thing about Hoga. Sometimes you get good ones, and sometimes you get bad ones, but mine happens to be they must have been in a really good mood in the factory the day that Hoga was made, because it is something. But all right, I think I'm going to take a break. I have some emails to get to, and I have some call-ins, so I think I'll come back with some emails. And so let me take a break and collect my thoughts and get these emails pulled up, and we'll do that next. So all right, we'll take a break, and I'll be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back from the break, and I forgot to mention, you know, according to the intro of this show done by Mr. Mike Williams, you know, the APS revival is still going on. It's catching fire all over the world. Everyone is shooting it. It is the hip thing. All the cool kids are doing it, and I know everyone is just tuning into this podcast to find out, you know, a little update on the APS revival, but, and yeah, 1997's not getting their film back anytime soon, because, you know, APS has now taken on such a trend-setting thing, a film at this point. Prices have went up at least another 1.7 cents since the last time I spoke about the APS revival. Today, I did get out my Nikon APS SLR, the Pronia. I think it's the 6i or something like that. I don't know. Doesn't matter. It's an APS SLR, of course, and my sons jumped into our hot tub to do a little hot tubbing, and hot tub, and yeah, because, you know, we have a hot tub here at the Gutterman Estate, all the amenities of luxury, and are here, and so they jumped in, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to get some shots of them in the hot tub, and just being goofy kids in a hot tub, so pulled out the Nikon APS SLR and took a couple of shots with that. So yeah, don't you worry, the APS revival isn't going anywhere. It's just continuing to gather steam. And if you've watched the Facebook group, you know, there's some haters out there that are trying to resist the trend. You know, anytime something gets really, really popular, you got some people that just want to rebel against it and all that. But we know, I mean, everyone is jumping on board, and you know, just you want to get in while the cool kids are doing it. So Just letting you know, there is a little update to the APS Revival. It's still going, and it's still just gaining steam daily. So, but all right, so got some emails to address. And some of these are actually to me and Andre, some are to Andre. But you know what? Andre's not here. And I'm going to go ahead and try to do my best without my partner in crime, without having the gruesome twosome here. I think I can maybe try to address these. So the first one is from Ian Fleming. He says, Mike and Andre, really enjoyed the show with Mike Padua. Just bought the Bees processor from Benoit Barbie Photography, as I think Andre mentioned. It's a great solution for rotating my processing drum for 8x10. Or any Jobo or Patterson tank. Keep shooting film, Ian Fleming. Well, thank you, Ian, for the email. And yeah, Mike Padua was a great guest, and very much enjoyed having him on. Obviously, we enjoyed it. It's our longest episode to date at this point. But and remember, folks, Shoot Film Co., Mike Padua's website, where he sells all his cool patches and t-shirts and fanny packs and all that good, and pins and all that good at film photography stuff to show your film pride. Remember, he gave us a discount code. If you go to his site, Shoot Film Co., and enter negative positives in the discount code, you will get 20% off. So thanks again to Mike for that. And Mike is also going to give a prize package to the winner of the Tag Team Double Exposure Challenge. So very much appreciate him being so generous and just being an all-around cool cat. But definitely want to have him back on at some point in the future. It was a real blast, and he was a great guest. And, you know, he had his own podcast for a while called Analog Cult. And there's still some episodes up that he posted of that. And, you know, there were some questions after he was on the podcast about whether he was going to continue that, his podcast. And he basically said, you know, he just didn't have time to really devote the kind of attention he wanted to devote to it. So just kind of put it on hiatus. And, you know, that's fine, man. Like, you know, everybody's got just a limited amount of time to embrace this hobby and pursue your passions. And if you can't give 100%, then maybe it's time to, you know, you only have so much percent to give to things. So maybe you want to give your 100% to something else. The good thing about this podcast is I don't think we ever give 100%. So it gives me a little bit of percentage to do other things like shoot APS film or whatever. But also, yeah, the Bees processor from Benoit Barbie. If you go to his website, I just actually watched a YouTube video that he has posted on his website that kind of explains it. You can see it at Benoitphoto.com. I think it's BoNetPhoto.com. I guess it's Bonet Photography. BoneyPhoto.com. I don't know. But yeah, if you can also search him on Instagram, and he'll have, you'll see a picture of that, the processor, the tank, kind of developing tank thing he made. And you can find the links that way as well. But definitely something to check out if you're into large format. I think the video I watched was for 4x5 film, where it's sort of like a reel where you can slide in 4x5 film in this little reel and put it in your Patterson tanks or whatever and develop it that way. So very interesting for large format shooters. I don't know if or when I'll get into large format, probably sometime in my old age, but when I retire or something is what I often say. But I kind of agree that something that Andre said recently on one of the episodes, he was like, you know, as far as like the ultra slow process of shooting film that large format kind of gives you, you know, Pinho was kind of fulfilling that need for him, like just the ultra kind of slow process and really thinking about the exposure and just, you know, just it being a very slow process shooting Pinho. And I kind of agree with him. Now that I actually had success at Pinho, I think that will kind of fulfill my ultra slow photography needs. So I think I'm kind of with him on that. I thought that was a really good point that he made there. But so anyway, what else do we have here? Okay, we have a email from Sherry Christensen, and she says, hey, Mike and Andre, just wanted to thank you both for the podcast and the encouragement in the Facebook group. Without it, I'm not sure I would have never had the courage to home develop. I'm also blaming you both for the enlarger. Not sure where the hell I'm going to put that. I can see some film sweats happening again. Andre, you forgot to put an APS camera on your Secret Santa list. There was APS film listed. Does this mean you are secretly shooting it? Oh, Andre, what's going on here? Are you joining the revival, the APS revival? Then you haven't told me about it? Has your pride not allowed you to admit that you're joining following my lead and joining the APS revival? This is something I got to look into here. Like, I like this, but okay. And then Sherry continues, says, okay, I do actually have a question. So here it is. I don't do much black and white work. I have the DF96 monobath, and that works fine for me. But I would like to try actual black and white developing. Since I don't do much of it, I need something that will mix in small batches and last a long time. The Unicolor C41 kit was simple to mix, and once mixed, followed the steps to develop. Black and white looks a bit more difficult. Speaking of the C41 kit, I used it 16 times. But 10 of them were two rows of 35 millimeters. So I got 26 rows without changing anything, adding time, etc., before seeing a very slight shift. And I mean very slight. Rookie mistake. Sure that I will make more. Sherry Christensen. And Sherry is at HT. Well, let's see. Her website is RR1 Photography. That's rr1photography.com. And she is on Instagram at Rural Root One Film. Rural Root One Film. It's RURAL, Rural Root, RUROUTE, 1ONE Film. So you can follow her on Instagram. I hope that made sense. But yeah, Sherry, as far as black and white, you know, honestly, most people actually consider black and white easier than C41. After my recent experience with it, I actually think C41, if you have a sous vide to really monitor your temperature and keep that temperature level consistent, I actually think C41 is easier and faster. But with my C41 kits, the very first kit, I got like over 30 rows out of it by increasing the time and of the development time, and got very good results. But as I was increasing the time, it got to the point where the developing times were getting too long, and it was just being kind of a pain. And, you know, I got my money's worth out of that kit, so it was time to dump it and do a fresh kit. Now I'm kind of at a point now where I think with the C41 kits, 20 to 25 rows is what I'm going to do, and then I'm just going to dump it at that point. I think at that point you're getting it for a dollar or less than a dollar a row for color developing. There's no sense to really push it much more than that. And as you know, go further than that, as you go past the 20, 25 row mark, your development times increase so much that it kind of gets to be a pain in the ass, truthfully. And as far as increasing development time, I've talked about this several times. I forget the article I read on this, but I mentioned it on a previous podcast. You can look it up if you really want to. But someone had wrote an article really diving into the Unicolor C41 kit that the FPP sells, and had really done a lot of science and math to kind of figure out how much to increase development time on these kits as you increase your rolls on these kits. And I used this formula, and it really did work really well. And it's basically, the formula he came up with was, you take the number 140, and you divide that by 40 minus N. Okay, so you take the number 40 minus N. N is the number of rows you process. So say you're on row 20. So you would do 40 minus 20, 40 minus N, and that would give you 20. And then you divide 140 by 20, and that would tell you how much development time to give to that next row that you're developing. So basically, yeah, that formula really worked for me. And then as you get like past row 25 into 30 or so, the development time does get pretty long. And so that's why I've kind of settled on 20, 25 rows. I'm good at that point. Man, a dollar to develop a row of color film, that's pretty darn cheap. So that's where I'm at with it. But even I did my first kit, I think I went 35 rows with it. But yeah, 20, 25, I'm happy from going on in the future. Now, as far as black and white, there's several ways you can do this. If you're someone that wants to keep chemicals for a long time and worried about them going bad, I really can't recommend HC-110 enough, because the beauty of HC-110 is it's a syrup. So it lasts a very long, very, very long time, and just hardly won't go bad. And you can just take your water, get your water at a, you know, however much solution you're going to make, fill that beaker or measuring cup up with that amount of water at the temperature you need it for the black and white developing. And you just take a little syringe and take out however many millimeters or milliliters you're going to need of HC-110. I do the dilution B, I believe it is, which is like a 32 to 1 or 31 to 1. I think it's 32 to 1 ratio. So it just takes, so many milliliters of the syrup, and you squirt that syrup in your already water temperature correct water, mix it up, and you're basically just using enough HC-110 to develop whatever your tank needs for that time. So you're only mixing up a tank amount of the developer. So you can pretty much not worry about a whole gallon of developer going bad or a liter going bad because you're only mixing up a tank full at one time. And I think that's the beauty of HC-110. And that syrup, since it's so thick, will just last a very, very long time. So I think that's one way you can look at doing it. Also, the FPP has recently brought out a lot of black and white chemicals that where you're just mixing up a liter rather than a gallon. And because in the past, I've often mixed up gallons of developer and stop bath and fixer and all that stuff. And so you're not, you only have a smaller amount to kind of use up. And if it does go bad, you're not, necessarily wasting as much. So you might look into the 1 liter chemicals that FPP is now selling. So I think that could be really handy. I still actually do mix up gallons of stop bath, fixer, HypoClear, because HypoClear kind of lasts a long time. And then stop bath will actually tell you when it's bad. If you buy the indicator stop bath, it will actually turn, it's yellow when you first mix it up. And when it goes bad, it kind of turns purple. So it kind of tells you when it's bad. So that's nice. And it seems to last a really long time. HypoClear also seems to last as well. So fixer is the only one you kind of got to worry about a little bit because you want to make sure it's properly fixing your film. But I did buy some stuff that's made by like Edwall. It's a little vial of vial dropper of this little solution. And you can, when you pour your fixer into your measuring cup or whatever, you can drop a drop of this Edwall HypoCheck. And if the drop of water hits the fixer, the drop of the HypoCheck hits the fixer and is clear, you're fine. The fixer's good. If it turns cloudy or milky, then you know your fixer's bad. So I would recommend maybe picking up a little bit of that too. It's a little pricey for the amount you get, but you're only dropping in one drop, so it lasts a long time. You get a lot of fixing tests out of that little HypoCheck little bottle of from Edwall, I think is who made the one that I have. It's Edwall, and I'm sure there's other brands out there as well. But yeah, I could definitely recommend HC-110. I used to be a D76 guy. Now I'm a big HC-110 guy just because of the fact that I can mix up a tank full when I'm getting ready to develop and not mix up gallons of it. So, and the 1 liter chemicals from the FPP might be another option too, where you're not mixing up quite so much of it. So if you're kind of sporadic or intermittent with your black and white processing, I think those would be good solutions. So, all right, Sherry, thank you for the email. So we're going to have you on the show very soon. So you'll get to hear from Sherry. She's kind of going through a harvest. She's a farmer in Canada, and like apparently it's she's getting a lot of rain. She just hasn't been able to do this harvest. But sometime after the harvest, when she's got some downtime, we're going to have her on the show, and that should be very exciting. So all right, let's see. Who else do we have here? Okay, Daniel Novak, one of our best emailers here recently. He's always got good comments and good questions. So let's see what Daniel says. He kind of actually addresses this to Andre. Andre's not here, so you're just going to have to deal with the gutter man answering this one for you. But he says, "Hello, Andre. Your latest episode had me think about this. While cost of film is definitely real, I look at it this way. I might have bought another DSLR, like the D850, for $3,000. Instead, I bought a bunch of film SLRs, all under $100. So if I take one, that leaves at least $2,900 for film. That's a lot of film. Plus, with the planned obsolescence of digital cameras, a lot of people replace them within 3 years. Even if one kept them way longer, like me, the above number would be swayed further towards film actually being cheaper. Even with a Leica, a used M6 for around $3,000 versus a digital Leica M10 for $8,000. And my medium format, Mamiya 645 1000S for $150 with lens, say a Pentax 645Z at $5,500. All right, that's enough. Be safe. Cheers, Dan. Okay, and he writes, enjoy the beauty that surrounds you. He has actually says that a lot, and he has a hashtag for that, ETBTSY. Enjoy the beauty that surrounds you. That's an awesome little hashtag there. I like that. And you can see Daniel, some of his work on, he has a website, danielnovakphoto.com, and also timelessbuffalo.com. And you can see Instagram on for Daniel at danielnovakphoto. On Facebook, he is Daniel Novak Photo. And on Flickr, he is Masinka, M-A-S-I-N-K-A. Well, thank you, Daniel. Daniel, I agree, man. Like, I was actually in the same boat when Pentax announced their K1, their first full-frame digital SLR. I was on the fence, man. I was like, I was actually doing my art show. And I was like, man, I could take the money I make in this art show. I could buy that thing. And I was like, I've been waiting for a Pentax to do a full frame digital. I could do it. I should probably do it. And but I came to my senses real quick because I realized, man, that thing when it came out, I think it was $1,900, maybe $2,000, which was a bargain for a full frame digital camera at the time. And but I thought, man, that is a lot of film. And so I end up buying a lot of film and probably buying a way more film cameras than I needed instead of, because I already kind of had in my mind I was going to buy this digital full frame Pentax K1. And so I already kind of had that money spent. So I kind of went crazy on buying old cameras and film instead. So probably still end up spending the same amount of money, but I've had a hell of a lot more fun with the film. So, very good points. And so, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, man, whether it's, whether the money works out better for film or for digital. But be honest with you, I mean, I don't think it really matters. What do you enjoy shooting? And, you know, what is, whether you like digital or like film, it's all good, man. Like, whatever you're having fun with. Because the bottom line in this life, man, let's just have fun and enjoy our hobbies, enjoy our passions, and whatever gear or equipment that can get you to that, then I think that's what you do. And honestly, I mean, granted, not everybody can afford all these expensive cameras or whatever, but, you know, whatever your budget allows, I think you're going to spend it, man. Like, you know, if you buy the digital camera, then you're going to want these super nice lenses that take full advantage of the super resolution that these digital sensors now have. So there's extra money in the lenses that you're going to buy. And if you want to do film, you know, you're going to find yourself buying a lot of film cameras, a lot of film chemicals, and all the little goofy little accessories and stuff we need. So I don't think at any way we look at this, we're going to spend a lot of money. So, but if it's your passion, you know, it brings you happiness and fun, then whether you're spending your money on film or digital, I don't think it really matters, because you're going to spend money on it regardless, because it brings you joy and it fulfills something in your life and it fulfills a creative, void that you might have. It fills your need to be creative. And I don't think you can put a price on that. So that's just my thoughts on it. But all right. I'm going to collect my thoughts again, come back, take a little break, come back and address some call-ins that we got to the show. So let's take a break and I'll be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back from the break, and it's time to address some call-ins. I kind of wish I had Andre on here to get another opinion on some of these call-ins, but, you know, I got to roll with the punches, and so I'll just take a swig of bourbon and try to get through these. But the first one is from Federico Quaglino, and actually he wants us to, he said we can just call him Freddie, so we'll get to Freddie. He's sent us a little call-in about color film, so let's listen to Federico or Freddy's call in, and I'll see what I can do to address that.
Hey guys, it's Federico here, or Freddy if you guys want to call me like that from Turin. I'm scanning some expired Fujifilm Super 200, one of my favorite films of all time. And, you know, I was thinking of the fact that, you know, we have all these new black and white films. And I love black and white, don't get me wrong, but I miss having new color negative film. And I was thinking about the fact that Fuji is just finishing its stock, not producing anymore. And Kodak isn't producing any new color film, except for now, you know, slide film. And there's always less and less types of color film, especially I love the, you know, the difference between Kodak and Fuji. What are your thoughts about this? And especially, what are your thoughts about, you know, extinction of high-speed color film? I give you guys a big hug, and hope to talk to you guys soon. Ciao.
Well, thank you, Federico, or Freddy, for the call-in. We always love to get the call-ins on the Anchor app. And remember, you can easily call in and get your voice on the show by downloading the free Anchor app and looking up negative positives. And you can send us a voice message, or, you know what, just take your phone and use your voice recorder or whatever and record on your phone and email us an audio file of you speaking. It's always much nicer to get those and to have us kind of fumble through reading one of your emails. but always appreciate the call-ins. But yeah, color film, man, it's tough, man, because, I mean, honestly, I think we can pretty much narrow it down. There's really two major manufacturers of color film, and that's Kodak and Fuji. And who the hell really knows what's going on with Fuji? Like, you know, there's the theory out there that they are actually no longer producing film, that they've actually tore their lines out and they're just selling stock left over in their deep freeze or whatever from a large production run from several years ago. Who really knows? But then again, then you get these rumors that Fuji might be trying to bring back black and white film, which would sort of say maybe their lines are still functional, that they can actually still produce film. But who knows? Like, they're so secretive, like, that you really never really know what's going on with Fuji. So I really don't see them with their commitment level of film at this point, bringing any new color films out. I think we can give huge props to Kodak for bringing out Ektachrome. And so that's exciting. That's actually, it's a new color film. And I say new color film because it's not really, it's like the old Ektachrome, because they had to kind of reformulate some things due to, you know, environmental standards have changed since the last time they produced it. And so this is a new formulation that they, and thus why it took so long for Ektachrome to come out. And I'm assuming it's going to be coming out very soon. And man, it does look great. So I think we can be super excited that there is a new color film approaching. And that's the Kodak Ektachrome. I think they're calling it E100. And man, the results look awesome. So, but as far as like color negative film, it's tough, man. I don't know. Like, I would have to guess that color film is a more expensive process, I would imagine, to manufacture than black and white film is. That's why there's so many smaller companies that are able to produce black and white film. Whereas color, just, I'm sure it's a much more expensive and probably tedious process to kind of introduce new color films, because there's so much about, like, you know, getting the, you know, the color right, and the kind of the science behind color has got to be a difficult thing, you know. But it's tough, man, because, you know, for my needs in color film, the color films that are out there are kind of fulfilling that for me. I'm not saying that I wouldn't mind seeing some new color films come out, but I'm just going to guess that that's an expensive proposition for a new color emulsion to come out. I do agree big time that where we're missing a lot in the color realm as far as film goes is high speed. And so I know, like, Lomography is really good about bringing having a lot of color films for sale. Now, granted, it seems that most of it might be rebadged, rebranded Kodak stocks. But, you know, you never really know. One way you can tell, obviously, is to look on a Lomography color film box. If it says made in USA, then obviously Kodak made that film. But that's one way to tell, I guess. But I do know that, like, you know, it's strange that Lomography has an 800 speed color film. that you can buy in 35 millimeter. And apparently it's supposed to be a Kodak stock, and Kodak actually has in some of their disposable cameras this 800 speed film. But Kodak doesn't sell like color 800 film anymore, other than Portra. Portra, of course, Portra 800 is an awesome film, but it's expensive. But there's no like gold or max 800 like they used to sell back in the day when I first started film photography. You could easily go to a drugstore or department store and buy Kodak 800 speed gold film. It might have been called max, I'm not sure which one it was, but it was very readily available. And now Kodak doesn't really sell that, but apparently the Lomography 800 is basically Kodak 800. I'm not sure, I haven't actually bought any of it, but that's what I've read. And Kodak does still make the 800 like max or gold version of that 800 speed film for their disposable cameras or single use cameras. So I'm not really sure why Kodak doesn't offer that as a cheaper, higher speed color film readily available to purchase. Maybe because they think it would cut into their Portra 800 sales, which is probably quite profitable for them since it's quite expensive. And then, you know, Fuji had some pretty high-speed color films that got discontinued. So yeah, I think we are missing out on a part of the market of high-speed color film. And that is something that I think that is a void that I'd like to see filled. And fortunately, Lomography regularly offers the 800-speed color film. Whether it's Kodak or whoever's making it, it's good that it's out there, I guess. But yeah, I think that's something that there's a little void there. But yeah, I don't know. It's just going to depend on this market, man. Like, how much is this film market going to grow? Because I am sure that Kodak spent big money to bring Ektachrome back, and hopefully, this Ektachrome, the money they spent, the research they spent to bring this back to market, to bring out what's actually sounds to me like a completely new emulsion, which is exciting. But I'm sure it costs them a lot of money in research. And so this thing needs to sell well. So if you want more color films out on the market, you want to see a company like Kodak that seems to, you know, excel at color film, because I'm not sure if we can count on Fuji to really put much money into developing a new color film or bringing back old color stocks. But maybe they would if the market continues to pick up and gain steam. I'm not sure, but because we don't really know where Fuji's at with things. But with Kodak, you know, if this Ektachrome sells really well, maybe we'll see them seeing it as, okay, now we can do Ektachrome in 120 and expect that to not be a big money loser. And then if they, you know, are able to recoup their investment on bringing Ektachrome back, then maybe they can say, like, well, okay, what else can we bring back color-wise, since the market seems to be a little less saturated in color. Saturated in color. See where I went there? Like, yeah. I had to throw in a dad joke there, maybe they can decide. Maybe it's worth it for us to bring back other color stocks or bring out new color stocks. But that's all going to depend on our voting dollars, folks. I mean, let's be honest. Like, companies are not doing this just out of the passion of it. They have to make money. They have to stay in business. They have to pay people. And if you want more color film stocks in the future, you want to see somebody invest in bringing some new emulsions out in color, then I think we gotta vote with our dollars. And I think Ektachrome would be a good place to place that vote. I remember, years ago when I was in high school, maybe even before I was into film photography, there was an Ektar. I think it was an Ektar 1000 speed film. Now, wouldn't that be cool to have that, like an Ektar, like a saturated color, but in 1000 speed? I'm sure it would be grainy as all get out, but that could be really cool. So maybe we could see an Ektar 1000 come back or something like that. Or and then the other thing is, like, maybe for Ania. There's some hope for that, because now they wanted to bring back some slide film, but one of the slide films that 3M Scotch used to own for Ania, and there was the 3M Scotch, I think it was 1000 speed slide film at one time. And so maybe if they can get up and going and make some money and get some chance to bring back some emulsions, maybe we could see a return of the Scotch, like 1,000 speed slide film. Now, wouldn't that be fun? But but yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But all I can say, I have no answers, no inside industry knowledge to really answer this. But it's all about voting with our dollars, folks. It's you know, if we support these new emulsions that come out, then the companies will be able to fund maybe trying a different emulsion or bringing something new out. So I think that's where we got to put our hopes in that basket, I think, and got to put our money where our mouth is. We want new emulsions in color or black and white. Going to have to support the new emulsions that come out. That's kind of my take on it. But all right. So we have one more call in from Graham Young of the Homemade Camera podcast. And let's listen to what Graham has to say, and we'll address that. So here's Mr. Graham Young.
Hey, Mike and Andre. This is Graham from the Homemade Camera podcast. I'm listening to your latest episode with Mike Padua, and I think that you both should probably just let Mike Padua take over your show, because he's way smoother than either of you. But anyway, you guys were talking about Ultrafine and Ultrafine Extreme in particular. I've been using that film for a while, and the bet on the street is that it's Ilford or Kentmere, just rebadged. It could be Ilford Pan 100 or Ilford Pan 400. Or it could be a Kentmere emulsion. Either way, I find it to be a little bit cheaper and considerably better than the .edu emulsions that are out there. Anyway, keep up the good work. Love the show.
Well, thank you, Graham Young from the Homemade Camera podcast. I have been catching up on that podcast slowly but surely. I really enjoyed it. There was one episode they had where they were talking about scammers, which Graham from Sunny 16 was telling everybody on the planet, if you ran into one, to just destroy it with a hammer immediately and do everyone a service. But they, you know, being camera nerds, and I mean that in a very loving and respectful way, because I'm one too, was like, no, don't take hammers to cameras. Like, we can find some use out of these. So they spent some money on eBay to buy some of these scammers, to try to find some functional use out of them. And I thought that was very interesting. I really look forward to seeing what they do with that. But a scammer, by the way, is like, I don't know if you've seen these, but they're like these plastic cameras that used to get, like, if you subscribe to Time Life magazine and you'll get this 35 millimeter camera, and they would make it look like it'd be this great camera. But it was like these little plastic cameras. I think on the front, it would say something like color optical lens or something like that. And they would have a couple of aperture settings, one shutter speed, just plastic pieces of junk pretty much. But I actually have one. And the funny thing is, they would actually put a piece of lead in the bottom of the camera, sort of just to make them feel more weighty, to add some weight to the camera so it wouldn't feel like a hollow piece of plastic, to make it feel like you're really getting something quality. But I have one. I forget what the name of mine is, but I shot one roll with it. And, yeah, it was crappily fantastic, I guess. It definitely had the toy camera look down. So, but yeah, I think I need to experiment with that camera a little more. I think I've only shot one roll through it, but yeah, very good podcast. Check out the Homemade Camera podcast if you really want to dive deep into camera building nerddom. And again, I mean that in a totally respectful and loving way, and I agree, Graham. If Mike wants to just take over this podcast, I'll step aside and let him do it. Mike Padua was a very good guest, and he should probably I don't know. Analog Cult should probably be at 166 episodes instead of this podcast. But anyway, Ultrafine. I've got a lot of stuff on the Facebook group since we talked about that film, and it seems like there's been a lot of kind of glowing reviews about it. It definitely seems to be, as Graham said, some sort of Ilford stock of some sort, either made by Ilford or Kentmere, which is a division of Ilford. It certainly looks like Ilford packaging. So I'm certain that it's some sort of product of Ilford in some sort of way. I can't verify that, but it suspiciously looks like Ilford packaging. But have said, I don't know if I mentioned this on a podcast or not, but I went to order a 100-foot bulk row of the Ultrafine Extreme 400, I think I was going to buy, or even the 100, whichever one they had in stock. Both of them were out of stock when I looked them up, but I think they're supposed to be back in stock this month. So I'm probably going to buy 100 foot of it and give it a good shot because, you know, it's so cheap. It's like less than $40 for 100 foot of 35 millimeter bulk row. And at that point, you can, that like I've said before, that would be a great film for doing short rows on. Like if you got a new camera, you just want to shoot like 10, 15 shots to make sure the camera works fine, or just don't feel like going through 36 exposures or 24 exposures. That film's so cheap in bulk that you don't have to really worry about the economy of bulk rolling. Because when you bulk load film, you know, say like Tri-X or T-Max or one of the Ilford stocks or whatever, if you do shorter rows, you're losing a little bit of film for the leader and the tail every time you do a bulk row. So if you do shorter rows, you're actually, you know, getting less film out of that 100-foot bulk row. So generally with more expensive 100-foot bulk row loading, you kind of want to do 36 exposures or 35 exposures or 30 exposures. Just get the most film you can get out of that 100-foot row to kind of make the economics add up to where you'll save money. But with the Ultrafine Extreme being so cheap, you don't really have to worry about that so much. So that's one nice thing I find out of it. Sean Nelson sent me a roll of it that I believe I'm about halfway through. And then at the FPP walking workshop, I was talking about it with John Gregory, and he had a couple rows of it. And I don't know if he particularly liked it or not, because he threw me a couple rows across the hotel rooms. Like, here, you can have this. So I have a two or three rows of it to shoot. And I really want to, it's probably be better for me to shoot that first and kind of see how much I like it before I invest in 100 foot of it. But most of the reviews, most people are saying it's a very fine film, and everything I've seen about it has been quite nice. So definitely looking forward to giving it a shot. And there's another pun, I guess. But all right. So again, thanks to Federico and Graham for the call-ins. Always in love them and enjoy them. I think I'm going to take one more break and collect my thoughts. There's a couple little housekeeping things I want to get out. And so let me collect my thoughts there. Going to take a break, and we will be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back from the break, and hopefully this solo show, when we normally have guests and normally at least have Andre on here, hopefully it hasn't been too boring, and hopefully you're still with me. But a couple of things I wanted to get out, and a couple of segments ago, I was talking about the Unicolor C41 kit and like the formula that I was using to increase development time. It was bugging me that I couldn't remember the man that did the, or I guess it's a man, yeah, that did the science and the math behind how much to increase development time on your C41 kits per row. So that was bugging me. I wish I'd had that when I was talking about it. And so it just was irritating me. I want to get that information out there. You can go to 120studio.com, 120studio.com. And there's an article, Unicolor C41 shelf life, how many rows, where he discusses how he came up with all this math to figure out math and science to figure out, you know, how much to increase development as you go further on in your C41 kits to develop color film and how much to increase development time, and how he came up with his little formula, which I've been using, and it's been working magnificently. So that is 120studio.com. So I wanted to get that out there. Also, man, I got to also say huge thanks to the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group, over 1,100 members strong, closing in on 1,200 members. Maybe by the time this podcast airs, we'll be around that 1,200 member mark. That's unbelievable. But what I really like about it is not only just the great interaction, the positive kind of vibe that's going on there, but now people are starting to do a whole lot more with like live Facebook videos where you can join in and ask them questions and see their processes and all that. Andre has been really big on, you know, showing people developing and all kinds of stuff. Dustin Cogsdell did a darkroom kind of tour. And then there's, of course, the face cast have been really popping up. We had a ton today. Like Stephen Ray was on a like a charity walk or something, and it was also doing some photography while he was doing this charity walk, and so he put up a lot of face casts. Matt Melcher from A Box of Cameras, he got out today, I believe it was, or maybe it was yesterday, to shoot some film, and he had a whole day to shoot film and was using a ton of different cameras, so he did some face casts, kind of showing what he was doing and what he was shooting and what cameras he was going to use and all that. All that stuff is so cool. I just love getting this kind of personal peek into people's their process and what they're thinking and what they're shooting, and it's just super exciting. And of course, I've put my generic drunken gutter man cave face cast up as well. So I like to do a couple of those a week, but it's just been a really fun thing, and it definitely keeps me inspired and keeps me motivated, and I hope it does the same for the listeners here. So if you're not a member of the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group, it is a wonderful place, and I don't take any credit for it. It is the members and the listeners of the show that have made that such an awesome community, and I can't thank you guys enough. So, and also on podcast news, Matt Melcher, which I mentioned, the Box of Cameras, I believe he has a new episode out. He'd been kind of quiet for a bit. John Gregory with a Light in a Dark Darkroom podcast. He is getting his darkroom built now in his new house. So I think we got some new episodes coming from him soon. So that's exciting. And I've actually been asking a little bit of questions on his Facebook group, the Light in the Dark Facebook group. About some purchases I need to make to get my darkroom up and going, because this winter after this art fair, that's going to be one of my goals, is to kind of get the last couple of pieces I need to start doing some darkroom printing, and I'm super excited about that. And what better time to do that than wintertime? So let's see, what else we got? So there's a new podcast that's popped up. It's from Kevin Lane and Kelly Lane, and they're two brothers. And they have a podcast called Uncle Jonesy's Cameras. And it's Uncle Jonesy's is spelled J-O-N-E-S-Y-S, apostrophe S, I guess. Uncle Jonesy's Cameras. It's Kevin and Kelly Lane. And I actually met Kelly Lane at the FPP Walking Workshop. And I think we had breakfast together every morning. And and also me and Kelly had some beers with Mark O'Brien from the FPP in the hotel bar one night. So had some good conversation there. So got to know Kelly really well. And but they have a podcast, Kevin and Kelly Lane. They actually put a post up on the Facebook group about it. I listened to their first episode. It's very good. And it's nice to see another film photography podcast pop up. Of course, we also have Neil Piper's podcast, Soot and Whitewash, that is he keeps popping out episodes. I like it. He's kind of reminding me of the old days where, you know, he pops up episodes randomly. You never know when's popping up, and so there's that to also check out and listen to, and he's kind of getting that on more platforms now. But let's get back to Kevin and Kelly Lane's podcast, Uncle Jonesy's Cameras. They wrote a post on the Facebook group. It says, Dear Negative Positives Community, this is from Kevin Lane. It says, my brother Kelly Lane and myself have decided to create a podcast of our own called Uncle Jonesy's Cameras. It is now on iTunes and will be available on Google Music and Spotify soon. Our purpose is to document our return to film photography and share what we have learned along the way. It is our wish that our show will find a place alongside some of our favorite podcasts, including, of course, the Negative Positives podcast. Well, thank you very much. And we hope you check out and enjoy our first episode, which is more introductory in nature. Our future episodes will be more focused on specific topics. We thank you in advance for listening. So yeah, check out that podcast, Uncle Jonesy's Cameras, a new film photography podcast. So it's nice to see all these pop up. And like I've always said, I think it was like episode 5 or something of this podcast. I was making a call out for anyone out there that has a take, any sort of spin on film photography, start a podcast. The more voices that are out there, the better. And any way you can help other film photographers or help people get into film photography, motivate them, keep them motivated, and build this community and make this community richer is an awesome, awesome thing. So I'm always happy to see more podcasts. Plus, the more podcasts I have to listen to, the more it makes my nights in the factory at the Ford Motor Company go by a little bit quicker. And I definitely appreciate anything that makes being a human robot a little less painful. So, so definitely check that out. So new podcast, very exciting. So, all right, I think we're going to wrap this episode up. Hopefully it hasn't been too awful, just me by myself, because I think this is the longest podcast I've ever done by myself. But thank you for the emails and the call-ins that definitely helped me get through this without my beloved co-host. I said beloved co-host. That sounds like something Andre would say, doesn't it? Yeah. But anyhow, so without having the gruesome twosome here, I was hopefully able to pull this off. But so let's wrap this up. You can see my photography on Instagram at Gutterman Photo. You can see on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can join the Facebook group that is the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. And we now have an Instagram account that is just Negative Positives, where we post when new episodes are up and, little things about, what the episodes talked about. And hopefully you're going to do a whole lot more with that in the future once I figure out what all I want to do with it. But it's there, Negative Positives on Instagram. So follow that account if you would, please. And you can email this program. That's at negpositives, N-E-G-positives at gmail.com. All right, I think that's it. So hope everybody has a great week, and we'll see you very soon. Everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos. Thank you very much. Stinger.